Welcome to Recurring Nightmares, episode 18. As promised, this month we're putting the original Candyman up against the new one that just came out in theaters and on demand at this point. And it'll be a little different because of that. Normally we go, whoever the host is has pretty detailed notes on the movie, and we'll walk you through the plot of it and stop to comment on things that we thought were cool or weird or stupid or whatever. We're still going to do that for the original Candyman, even though that's kind of faded in my memory a little bit because we saw these movies a month ago. It's another problem this month. But we both saw the new Candyman in theaters, and I don't know about you. I don't like to take notes in the theater. I just like to experience it.
Yeah.
So, you know, details that might be a little fuzzy on both these movies because it has been a few weeks for us. But on the flip side of that, we've had some time to, like, digest our thoughts for once. Usually it's like sometimes we come in real hot, like you just finished one of the movies, or, you know. We've gotten some time to sit with these. I forgot to introduce us. I'm Jeff. As always, joining me is Chris.
That's me.
And as always, we're going to get started just talking about the movies we've seen in the last month. Actually, a decent amount of new movies I think we both kind of saw. So I'll start with you, Chris. What have you been watching?
Well, I'm gonna save the big one for last.
Okay.
I want to talk a little bit in detail on that one.
Okay.
Let's see. I'll start off with Kate. New Mary Elizabeth Winstead film, Woody Harrelson in it. I like Mary Elizabeth Winstead a lot.
Yeah, same.
I like the look of this, like the, how, you know, the trailers for this looked like it's all like done in neon and she plays an assassin. It's fine. Like, it's another one of those like lady killer movies that we've had a bunch of them over the last couple months with the like Gunpowder Milkshake.
Yeah.
Jolt. The Protégé.
None like, of them have seemed to click or whatever, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean,
none of these are big hits.
I think I like The Protégé the most out of all of them. Like,
yeah,
this is fine. It's very like it's just generic. Like, it's you've seen this story before. Assassin does, you know, assassin goes kill somebody, has change of heart, and then something bad happens to that assassin, which, you know. They're going to die by the end of the film, so they're against the clock of trying to get their revenge and make amends for, you know, past mistakes. It's that film. Like, we've all seen it multiple times. It's done, you know, she's great. Mary Elizabeth Winstead's great in it. The action is actually really good, like the fight scenes they have. Woody Harrelson is named on it, but he is literally in it like at the beginning for like the opening sequence.
Yeah.
And then like he comes in the last act. He's mostly not there. Like,
I was going to ask how he was in it. He's one of my favorite actors.
He's good. Like he ultimately like he plays her mentor in this, and you know, there's a twist that you see coming.
Yeah.
But he's good. Like, I think everybody in this is good. It's competently made. It's just another one of those films. So, it's on Netflix though. So, you know, have at it if you have Netflix.
I got a little bit of a straight to Netflix vibe off of it, but I like her as well. So I was thinking of checking it out.
Yeah. I think in a different year, like this is a film that probably hits like right about now, actually. Like it feels like a September action movie.
Yeah,
like it's gonna make like $15 million in theaters. Like that's what it feels like. It's not big. It's like it's probably not gonna make its budget back, but the people involved in it had a good time. It's fine.
All right.
It's about an hour and 40 minutes. So if you have Netflix, like, and you have nothing else to watch on that service,
that's quite the endorsement.
Yeah. Yeah, it's literally like this is like, I was checking my phone during it.
Yeah.
It's one of those.
All right. I'll get to it, I'm sure, at some point, just for her.
See, next up, another new movie. This one actually hit theaters, though, and it was out. I guess when our last episode went up, this was out in theaters. It might be gone now. Hugh Jackman's Reminiscence.
Yeah.
Directed by Lisa Joy, who and written by Lisa Joy, who has been working as a producer with Jonathan Nolan on Westworld.
Yeah.
And like you can see, like, if you watch this movie, you can definitely see that, like, it has that same vibe that Westworld does.
Yeah, a little bit.
Cool world. The oceans have risen. Basically, if you're not like super rich, you live in what has become like a shitty version of Miami. That's people, like, people Venice. Like,
live at night because it's too hot during the day,
and everything's flooded, so you have to travel everywhere by boat. And
cool
setting.
Yeah.
The film itself is kind of boring. It's this like noir mystery where this guy's trying to track down a former lover that it turns out betrayed him. And so, like, you spend this whole movie with him and his obsession. And like, I like where it ended up. I thought it like ended up nice, but it's like just kind of aggressively dull throughout.
Yeah, it's very. I don't hate the movie because it did remind me a little bit of kind of like sci-fi movies that came out in the 90s a little bit, like stuff like Strange Days or Dark City and stuff like that. But it's like nowhere near as good as any of those. I think the main problem is just what you said. It's just kind of boring. Like, you can feel where it's going from the beginning, and I think some of its noir stylings kind of work against it a little bit. Like, he's just so singularly obsessed with finding this girl who he had sex with a couple times. Like, it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's okay. Like, it was an okay free watch on HBO Max, I thought. I don't know if it's still going to be up there when this episode.
No, it was actually. I watched it on the last day it was available. It was only up for a month. Like, that seems to be how HBO is running their new stuff. It'll be back probably before the end of the year, but
I'd say wait for it to be free again. I would not.
For sure. Yeah.
It's kind of just boring, and again, not terrible, but there's no, like, there's an action scene or two, but it's not, they're not very good. I don't know.
I mean, I thought the shootout in the bar where, like, Hugh Jackman's being held underwater and Tandy knew, like, I thought it was fun. Like, it was like, it was fine, but yeah, there's nothing's going to like blow your mind here. Like, the coolest thing I think we said at the top is just the setting is really neat.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of this technology that you can look through people's minds and interact with them in a way. I thought that was interesting, but it's more just like stylings and themes and setting that is good as opposed to the actual plot.
Yeah. The plot itself is, you just feel it. Like, you feel where it's going the whole way. I thought the action, what little there is, was just not remarkable at all. And I don't know. I like the two leads, though. I like them both, but I don't know. I feel like we're giving this movie more due right now than it even.
Yeah, deserves. It's like, you know, if you have, when it comes back to HBO, watch it there. Like, I know there are people that really like really came out of it like super strong, really enjoying it, kind of like up there comparing it to like the new Blade Runner, which is crazy talk, but
no.
There are fans of this thing, and like, I think maybe if you enjoy a slower paced sci-fi story, it might work for you a little bit more. One more before I jump into Malignant. I've been watching American Horror Story. I think I mentioned that I kind of got back into it last month, where I was watching American Horror Stories, which is their one-off summer TV show they did. I've watched through Cult, Apocalypse, and I'm halfway through 1984. which is the not the latest season. That's double feature. But I'm like catching up, and look, American Horror Story is a acquired taste, I think. it's a weird show, does some weird things. It's an anthology, a yearly anthology series, so like each season is its own thing, but a lot of the same actors return. I did not like Cult at all. It's a weird watch now, you know, 4 years after, you know, Trump, and that film was that series was filmed the year after. It feels very in response to that, but also it's like, holy shit, like that, like this is in some ways maybe too real. like you're like, some of the stuff that they were suggesting probably in 2017, 2018 when this aired would be like, that's outlandish. And now it's like, maybe it's not outlandish enough. Like,
nothing's outlandish anymore.
Yeah, so it's like a hard watch. I didn't love it. Whatever. Apocalypse, on the other hand, is stupid fun. It's a follow-up to season 3, which was Coven, which is all about the witches.
Yeah.
That's my favorite season of the show. I really liked it. It's dumb, campy fun. Takes place after a nuclear holocaust that's caused by the Antichrist, and then the witches show up and they battle with the Antichrist. It's stupid, like, but it's like stupid in like a fun yeah. way.
Well, that's good. That's like a movie we're gonna talk about soon.
Yes. So like, I enjoyed it. I know the, like, American Horror Story fans kind of hate it. And I've been watching 1984, which is the last season that they had. And I love that. It is, I'm 6 episodes in now. They probably should have ended it at episode 5. But prior to that, it is like this awesome tribute to 80s slasher films. Like,
yeah.
Specifically like, you know, Friday the 13th, like, takes place at a campsite.
Yeah, yeah.
And like most of the first 4 episodes take place all in one night. So it's like you get to see like it kind of played out a little bit more than you would in like, say, Friday the 13th, which is like a 90-minute film.
Yeah.
It's just like, you're getting way more of that. And but everybody is like super campy. The music's great. The costuming is great. Billy Lord, she's fantastic in it. Like, she plays this bitchy girl. Emma Roberts plays the, like, this nice, sweet girl. She's great. Like, I am having a blast with it. I'm not sure I'm going to like how the rest of the season ends up, because it ends and then they, you know, there's a twist that happens and then it jumps like 5 years. And it's like, I'm not sure I like where this is going, but
how many episodes is it going to be like that season? Then you said that the first 4 were good, and
yeah, it's 9 episodes long. It's just the shortest American Horror Story.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like the first 4 or 5 were excellent. They all take place in that one night, and then it's like, oh, we're going to do like the aftermath and follow up with these characters. Like, I don't need that. Like, I like the tribute to slasher films.
You got your slasher movie and now you have half a season left.
It was great. It's like, and it's like they paid homage to it, but it was also like, this is so stupid. It's fun. Like, and that's when American Horror Story clicks for me. That's when it's doing it. When it's like Ryan Murphy and Brad Kilpatrick, I think, where they are just like Brad Falchuk, they are just like going at it and like just putting awesome imagery on the screen with like stupid dialogue. And I don't know what happened sometime between like when I started watching this and then fell off. I guess FX just like flat out allows you to say whatever the fuck you want to say now.
Like, there are a lot, yeah, like on a lot of different shows on different channels. It's just like, it doesn't matter now because everything's basically streaming anyway.
And it's like, normally, like, I mean, I'm not adverse to somebody saying the word fuck, but I'm not used to hearing it on like a network show, and like FX, not network cable TV, but also not HBO. So like, there's always kind of been like, oh, they pushed the envelope a little, but now it's just like, they don't give a shit anymore. Like,
think I noticed that we're watching like Reservation Dogs or something the other week. I think they were like swearing and stuff in it, and I don't notice as much anymore because again, it's such a mix of like, did this originate on streaming or this is this an actual TV show that like was on TV? But when I do notice it, like I'm like, I guess like you, I'm like, I guess they just let people do what they want now, you know?
Yep.
Which is good. I like that.
Yeah. Let's have at it. So yeah, I'm going to finish 1984 and then start in on Double Feature. We'll see. I'll finally be caught up on that. It's like a mixed bag of a show. But
what was the one with Lady Gaga?
Hotel.
Okay, that's like even before any of those.
Yeah, and it was it took place in the hotel. It had lots of ghosts, but also like that was like their vampire season.
Yeah, I remember she was like sexy vampire thing going on. I watched an episode just to see that.
Yeah, I mean she's pretty good in it. Like that was one of her first big acting roles. So, all right, let's talk about it, Jeff.
Yeah,
the new James Wan movie. Malignant. Yeah. I don't even know where to start with this. This movie's batshit insane. I think it's the most fun I had watching a movie this year.
It's up there for me really high. And I would not expect that because I'm not like a huge James Wan fan. And also just based on the trailer, I thought we were getting another like kind of in the vein of Insidious or The Conjuring. Yep. It looked pretty creepy. I was interested to see it because I'm always, even though like I don't love anything he's made, I was like, all right, this guy, like, you know, he's a big horror director. This looks like, he's doing a new thing, even if it's kind of similar. Nothing like any those other movies. I don't think it's like anything he's done.
No, and like you're spot on. Like those trailers made it seem like, you know, Conjuring, Insidious, the poster kind of made it seem like that as well. Like I guess there's like a feel of like some like Argento type of like stylings to the movie poster. But and that's also what Juan has said publicly, that he was trying to like do his twist on that type of horror.
He's saying it's his version of the giallo, and I'm like, I'm not super familiar with giallos, but like I don't think that's what this is.
I don't know, like that's the thing, I don't know how to classify this because it is so insane. It's like weirdly paced.
It reminds me of Frank Henenlotter, like Basket Case or Brain Damage, but like with a huge budget and choreography and shit. And it's like, that's an interesting mix. It's like this really goofy, cheesy, like bonkers horror movie, but someone making it who has backing of a studio because he's made like, you know, Aquaman and all this like really popular stuff. This is James Wan doing one for him, and I love it for that.
I think one of our friends kind of said it is like this. He's kind of become harsh Christopher Nolan, right? Like he is so successful, like and everything that dude touches is like gold. Like, you know, he created Saw with those guys, and he came up with The Conjuring and turned that into a franchise, and then Insidious turned that into a franchise. Like the guy is just like on fire, and then they give him, you know, Furious 7 and Aquaman, and like
expect them to do well, but they do well. They actually, I think Aquaman did get pretty well reviewed. Like I know there's fans of it,
yeah,
and I just love that he took that clout or whatever that he's got now and made this thing that is like a bonkers tribute to crazy VHS shit from the 80s. Like, but again, doesn't look like a cheap 80s horror movie. It looks
great. Like, yeah, it's expensive. Really good looking film. Special effects are great, except when they, you know, when they're trying to go for cheesy. I love the opening of this movie. Like it feels like kind of like you said, like that VHS feel, and it just feels campy right off the bat. Like the doctor's talking, and then before I think like the title the title credits roll, like she kind of looks at it, it's like, time to cut the cancer out. Like something stupid, like it's so over dramatic and overacted that it's perfect. And you're like,
yeah,
okay, I'm on board. And then it shifts, like then it becomes like this. Then you feel like maybe it is that Insidious Conjuring type thing.
For a little bit, yeah.
For like 20 minutes, and then it shifts again, and then it becomes this like weird teleporting adventure.
But I do think all of it is intentional. I think James Wan knows what he's doing.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I think that's what kept, like, you know, the first time I watched through it, it was like, it just kept twisting and it like turning itself around completely and being something else. And that's what kind of kept me. It's like, what the hell is going on? And then the reveal just drops and it is hysterical.
Hysterical. Amazing. A great shot.
Yeah.
And it sparks off the last half hour, which really makes the movie for me. Like,
oh, there's an action scene in it that rivals, like, you know, John Wick and shit like that. And it's all just absurd. Like, it is
very
just
creative.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absurd. The chair throwing. And the look of it, because, there's someone that's running around backwards and, it's like inventive and clever, and it does remind you of like a big action movie scene, because it kind of is at that point. I do think that there's like, I wish there was not CGI in this, but you know, you could tell sometimes when there's CGI, but
yeah,
it's so campy it doesn't really matter. But I just would prefer to him doing it with practical effects. But I don't have a lot of complaints with this thing. And I could see people that would watch it and not like it because they don't like cheese or whatever, sure. You know? Like, oh, the acting's bad or this and that. It's like, the only thing I would say to those people is you have to understand it's all on purpose. Like, this is all totally, like, he knows how stupid and silly it is, and that's what he's going for. And I loved it. I personally, like, I think you and I are kind of on the same page here with The Malignant. It is, like, definitely one of my favorite movies of the year.
It's just fun.
Yeah.
Like, and I think like so many films, like especially horror films, take themselves way too seriously. And this film, like it, like, hey, we're serious. We're not serious at all. And it just, it just like embraces it. And it just keeps ramping up, keeps escalating the insanity. And you're like, they can't top that. And then they do. And then like just the ending, like even like I really like that because like it goes one way and then you're like, shit, like it's not like that's not what happened at all. Oh my god, like this is great. I loved it. I understand fully, like people are like, I don't like this at all. It was bad, it's garbage. Like, fine, I get it, like you. But that James Wan hit me perfectly with this. This is going to be one, like, I think I'll be watching over and over again just because it's just a fun movie.
I don't think you and I are the only ones either. I think that a huge portion of the horror community actually really does love this movie and got it. And on top of that, I do think this is a movie that's going to endure. I mean, it's always dangerous to say these things after something just comes out, but it really feels like this one made a mark this year. Like, he's just... That for opening weekend, like everyone was talking about it on Twitter and just like, have you seen this fucking nutso movie?
Yeah.
They like had a moment, you know, and I do think it will stick around. I watched the last half hour 3 times that weekend and it like is so crazy that like it, like the first hour and a half have been deleted from my brain and I need to like watch the whole thing again. I do plan to pick it up on 4K when it comes out, so I will get my full rewatch in again. But yeah, I really loved Malignant. Sure we'll talk about it again. We talk year end.
Yeah, later in the year. And I, like you, like I mean, you buy way more movies than I do anymore. But
yeah.
I think this is one I want in my collection.
Right? You're gonna like rewatch that shit every
and
year.
I want. It's like one of those ones that like, you know, a friend comes over and like, yo, you see this? They're like, no, and like, oh boy. Just to like kind of like see somebody else experience it for the first time. Whether they love it or hate it, just to see like how they go through the twists and turns of it, I think will be a blast.
Love or hate it, it's a movie that's going to get a reaction out of you, and that's something, you know. Anything else that you wanted to touch on that you saw this last month?
Nope, that was everything. Okay. I was very light this month.
Well, you were burning through a lot of a TV show too, so that takes some time. Yeah. You touched on a couple of mine, but there's a few big ones that I really liked. Actually, like we have Malignant, you just mentioned, and then two of the ones I'm about to talk about are on my shortlist for best movies of the year, and I'll just get right to those first. One I just saw this week called Zola, and I don't know if you've heard anything about this movie, but it's the movie that came out earlier this year that was based on a Twitter thread, like pretty much adapted from a 148-tweet Twitter thread. That's a true story. And the way the story goes is this girl is a waitress. She meets one of her customers is a stripper who talks her into getting into stripping. They head off to Tampa together for the weekend to go do some stripping and make some money. And our main character, this girl who starts the movie as a waitress, suddenly realizes that the guy that's driving them down there, and he's played by Coleman Dingo, who we're going to talk about tonight. He is in the new Candyman. Turns out that this guy's a pimp, and he's like, yeah, they're going to be stripping in strip clubs, but like he's also going to be pimping them out to people on like Backpage. And so she like realizes too late, because she's now on the road trip with this guy far away from her boyfriend, whatever, that she's gotten herself into a really bad situation, because she does not want to be a prostitute. But this guy's like, you're gonna do what the fuck I say. And so and the story plays out from there. I found it to be really interesting and entertaining, and like one of those like youth movies that just kind of has a lot of energy and like style with like, you know, the way it's made. And just feels like danger around every corner. You're like, oh fuck, this is a bad situation. Oh fuck, like continuous bad. And yeah, pretty intense and entertaining. And also, it's like under 90 minutes, and it blows by because you're just so worried about her the whole time.
Where is this available on anything?
Just to rent now. It finally. Okay. You know, it's one of those ones I've been watching for the $20 rental price to drop.
Yep.
And it's down to a regular rental price.
Okay.
So that's Zola. If you're into, like, stuff like that, like, I think this would be a really good double feature with Spring Breakers, honestly, because that Florida vibe. And also, the other thing I really liked about it is it was shot in Tampa, which, you know, I've been to a few times, and you just kind of recognize... Just first off, the whole vibe of it, and just like, oh, they're driving over this one bridge. I drove over that bridge. I remember that bridge. That was pretty neat too for me. Nice. But it's entertaining. It's worth the rental, I'd say.
Okay.
The other one I really enjoyed is called The Voyeurs, and that is on Amazon Prime. It's an Amazon Prime original, so if you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it. And it stars Sydney Sweeney and Justice Smith. As this couple who they move into this apartment building, and they notice that they could see into the apartment across the way from them. You know, they got these big open, you know, big windows, and they begin watching the other couple across the way have sex. It's like the opening premise of this movie. And it goes fucking insane places from there. Sydney Sweeney is someone who I have noticed for a while now. She looks a little young, but I think it's safe for me to say now that I find her to be pretty hot, because she's naked all over this movie. And this reminds me of like a type of movie that would be made in the 90s, like in the vein of something like Basic Instinct or something like that. You know, just when they used to have like sexy thrillers, you know what I mean? What this is. And I want to say more to like give you an idea of the hook. I'll say a little bit more because it's not giving away much because it this movie takes a lot of twists and turns. It goes really fun places, really dark places, and you know, some of the stuff at the end is just absolutely insane, and it veers into like horror movie stuff. But like it, you know, they start to notice that the boyfriend across the way like cheats on his girlfriend a lot. And our main character, played by Sydney Sweeney, starts to be like, "Don't we have a responsibility to do something about this?" And it escalates from there. It's good, worth watching in my opinion. It's silly and it's trashy, but that's what it's trying to be. It's trying to be one of those movies from the '90s. Like the director put out a list on Letterboxd of all the stuff he quote unquote researched as he was writing it. Yeah, so I'd say check it out if you're into those types of movies. But if you're listening to the show, you like suspense and crazy thriller shit, I'd say check it out.
It is. I have it on my Amazon watch list. I just haven't had a chance to sit down and watch it, but I've heard good things.
I thought
of what you had said. Yeah. So.
I'll touch on a few other things real quick.
Yeah.
Shudder. I watched a new Shudder original this month called Superhost. That's about a couple who goes to stay at a rental house, and they're like this YouTube personality couple, and they're staying at this house because it's supposedly awesome as shit. And they start to realize that the owner of the house, who keeps checking in on them, might be nuts. I thought Superhost was pretty fun. Like it's. You know, not a must see or anything, but better than a lot of Shudder originals. I thought it did a really good job of making fun of, you know, kind of skewering the YouTube personality couple and showing like how much of their personalities are just like an act that you have to act a certain way on YouTube in order to get, you know, subscribers and viewers and shit. And
yep.
Once the cameras are off, it's just them worrying about that shit and acting normal kind of. And the crazy rental house owner, I can't remember the actress. These are all kind of new people in this. He gives a really great performance as the nutcase in this. So if that sounds fun to you, that's on Shudder. Again, I thought it was pretty entertaining, actually. Like a 3-star, you know, watch.
All right. Sounds fun though.
New Clint Eastwood movie called Cry Macho. I'll just leave it at this. He's made this type of movie before, and this one, there's less going on, not a whole lot of plot to it. And it's kind of like a, you know, older guy, young kid, become friends type thing on the road. He's revisited all this material a lot of times. Very quiet, gentle version of that where not a lot happens. And I'd say, Clint Eastwood fans, of course, are probably going to watch this, but I think everyone else could skip. There's better versions of this that he's done. And it's like, the other thing is, he looks really so old now that it is distracting the entire movie. Like, you're just like, this guy's going to die. Like, he looks like a shell of who he was, even in... You know, even versus a couple of years ago when he was in The Mule, which I think was a better movie than this.
He's like, not what, 91 now?
Yeah. And he's really starting to look his age. And like, to where it's like, even his acting and stuff seems a little off. His directing is still pretty good, actually. But like, his presence on screen is just distracting more than anything. Like, anytime you see him, all you're thinking about is like, this guy's going to die.
Yeah, like I saw some imagery of it, and he like very gaunt looking, and
yeah,
like, in the it's face. Like, yeah. I almost wonder if it's like this is really what's keeping him alive. Like,
yeah, the guy is a workaholic, you know.
Like, I'm just gonna keep making movies because once I stop, like I'm dead. Like that, it's really sad. But
yeah, and, you know, and the thing is, he's done this re-examination of his. You know, his early on-screen persona a million times now.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of me wanted this Cry Macho to be like the one that really, like, the masterpiece that, like, you know, puts it all to rest, and he could hang up his hat and say that's a career, but he's not going to top Unforgiven, and this doesn't come even close.
did you hear the I guess some of the backstory on this film where Arnold Schwarzenegger was supposed to play it like a decade ago?
He was supposed to at one point. Like, Eastwood's been trying to make this for 30 years.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, because when you see it, there's not a ton to it. Like, other than the fact that it touches on themes that he likes to touch on, there's just not a lot to the story. It's just him and this kid on the road running into the little adventures. It's very... I couldn't hate it at all, because it's just, it's a pleasant experience, but not much is happening, you know? And at the end, you're like, okay, what was the conflict here? Oh, nothing really. It's just...
All right. Well, I will most likely be skipping out on that one.
It's on HBO Max for people who care, but I think this is one for Eastwood fans only. Very last thing, a new Nick Cage movie called Prisoners of the Ghostland. Awesome trailer, awesome premise, Nick Cage in Cage mode. It's like Cage is like this bank robber who's in prison. This rich dude tells him, hey, you get my granddaughter back and you could be a free man. But also I strapped bombs to your testicles and if you don't find her in 5 days or whatever, I'm going to fucking blow you up. Sounds like a very fun, and that bad guy is played by Bill Moseley, who's always fun. But good lord. And this director has apparently done a lot of like cool exploitation type stuff. And I don't know. I thought this was one of the most boring, almost unwatchable movies I've seen all year. I watched it the same night as Cry Macho, and it made Cry Macho seem exciting. Nothing happens in Cry Macho.
And that's crazy. Stuff
should be happening in this. Yeah, with
the premise you just laid out, that's insane.
Yeah, it sounds like it'd be super fun, but it's so much of it is just in these two different sets where people are standing around talking and like uttering utter nonsense, and it's just a bunch of people standing around in weird costumes and shit, like being weird to be weird, and you're just like, is anything ever gonna fucking happen here? I'm just going to leave it at that. I'd say, even for, you know, I'm a pretty big Nick Cage fan, I'd say it's a total skip. Do not rent Prisoners of the Ghostland. And you know what's so weird, too, is I do see a lot of people who did enjoy it being like, that was so bonkers, man. That's exactly a type of, like, midnight movie, you know, that you want. And I'm like, I guess the marketing worked magic on some people, because that's what it was marketed to me. That's not the movie I watched.
So, question for you. This is like the second kind of high-profile weirdo Nick Cage movie this year. Which one kind of works out better, this or Willy's Wonderland?
Willy's Wonderland, but I don't think that's very good either.
Right. I remember you said that it wasn't great, so I was kind of wondering how that stacked up.
That at least is like, you're getting the premise that's given to you, and it sucks, but it's like at least...
It's like they don't even have him speak anything in that movie.
Yeah, and it's still better. There's an awesome line delivery in Prisoners of the Ghostland, though, where he screams about his testicles. Only thing in the whole movie that like got, you know, the reaction out of me.
So Pig is the Pig. Nick Cage movie of the year.
And that's just him in a normal drama. Got mostly it. Normal drama. But yeah, Pig is worth watching. I think that'll do it this month. There's plenty there to watch. And if you have not seen Malignant yet, check that out before it leaves HBO Max. All right, Chris, let's get into Candyman versus Candyman. And we're going to start with the original Candyman from 1992.
Have you ever heard of Candyman? And if you look in the mirror and you say his name 5 times.
In cities everywhere.
Candyman?
They whisper his name.
Right. Candyman.
It's just a story.
Candyman?
Candyman.
Just a ghost story.
Candyman.
entire community starts attributing the daily horrors of their lives to a mythical figure.
The legend first appeared in 1890. He was attacked, mutilated, and burned to death. Poor Candyman.
Helen, a woman died in there. Leave it.
Everyone knows he isn't real.
That's modern oral folklore.
Everyone. Except Helen Lyle.
Bring it up.
It ain't safe around here.
That don't scare too easy.
Don't know about Ruthie Jean? They ain't never gonna catch him.
Who?
Candyman.
Helen.
Who is that?
I came for you.
Do I know you?
Now, she is about to discover.
Helen?
What's behind the mystery?
I'm sick.
What's behind the legend?
Listen, he's under the bed!
And most terrifying of all,
come with me.
What's behind the mirror?
He's here.
Candyman, you don't have to believe. Just beware.
Written and directed by Bernard Rose, who continues to work, but this is probably the most notable thing he's done, in my opinion. It came out October 16th of 1992. Budget of $9 million. Box office is $25.8 million. And it did spawn sequels, and obviously the film kind of lives on to this day because we got a new sequel this year. It sits at 77% on the Rotten Tomato meter, and from viewers on IMDb, it has, I think, a kind of low score for what it is, 6.7. Story of Candyman. The basic idea here is this grad student played by Virginia Madsen. She starts studying this local urban legend in Chicago, specifically Cabrini Green, about this guy who was killed in the 1800s, and now he's back haunting the area, and she goes into Cabrini Green to investigate. We'll touch on the details of it all as we go along. And before we get into it, I don't know about you, but like I was a kid when it came out, and I do remember when it came out, like Candyman had this like reputation as being this ultra scary movie.
Yes.
When I was a kid, yeah. And to the point where when I saw it as a kid, because it's not a normal slasher movie, I didn't like it when I was a kid. It is really like, it gives you, like, there's gore in it and there's some kills, and you know, he is a slasher type monster kind of, but it's much more of an adult movie than I was expecting going in as a kid. And I think because of that, like, some of the more adult themes, I think, is why I love it so much now. I'm gonna give it away, you know, right at the beginning here. I really like this movie now. Let's run through it a little bit. Cool opening credits where we're like flying over Chicago looking down, which gets mirrored in the remake, except it's looking up instead. Awesome score by Philip Glass. I don't know about you. I think this is one of the best like theme songs ever. Like, I just think it's great music.
Yeah, it's really good. Very memorable.
Yeah. We get this opening story that sets up like the legend of Candyman, where, you know, if you say his name five times in the mirror, he'll come get you. And it's like this guy and his girlfriend. And the guy's played by Ted Raimi, Sam Raimi's brother. You know, so we get the, like, this opening kill. And it's like Virginia Madsen, the grad student, telling the story. We find out she's married to a professor played by Xander Berkeley. He teaches urban legends. The custodian at the school tells her about Candyman and that he lives in Cabrini Green and killed some woman there. And this gets her like, all right, this is what my thesis is going to be. It's going to be on Candyman. She, you know, instead of hitting the stacks in the library, she's like, let's go to the source and, like, you know, do some real work here and make an interesting thesis. And so she goes to Cabrini with a friend to do actual research. And another thing I like about this movie is Cabrini Green, as it stands in the movie, no longer exists. And so the Candyman, the original, kind of acts as this historic artifact showing a place that no longer really exists. I mean, what does exist today is shown in the new one, but these have been gone for a decade now, at least.
Okay.
They go in, they're taking pics all over this place. They go into the apartment where the lady was killed, and they kind of theorize that, like, someone, or the Candyman, like, entered through this bathroom mirror. Like, there's nothing really separating the apartments in the bathrooms. Like, it's just like a mirror against the mirror. So if you, like, punch that out, you could basically crawl into the next apartment.
Which also is accurate. Like, that, yeah, that shit happens in apartments all the time where, yeah, they skimp on stuff. And you've probably seen, like, TikTok or YouTube videos where, like, somebody, like, pulls off the mirror and there's an abandoned apartment on the other side.
It's fucking wild.
Yeah.
And then in there they find, like, candy with razor blades on the floor, which is another, you know, when they made the remake, they really thought about some of the things that were touched on here. Or not the remake, the sequel, I should say.
Yeah.
Some lady yells at them. They ask to interview her. And they go in her apartment. And, you know, her apartment compared to, like, the hallways of these towers, you know, is pretty nice. Like, it's in a little apartment. It's modest, but, you know, in the hallways, there's just graffiti and shit everywhere. And they go in. She's got, like, a nice little apartment. He's suspicious of them, these people, you know, nosing around there, and
which is, you know, is something that it, you know, it's kind of a theme throughout the film, but,
like, yeah,
Helen, our main character, she is a, not only is she, like, you know, this college student or whatever, but she's a white woman, like, invading this, you know, which is, you know, these projects, which, you know, primarily black populated.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, people are going to be skeptical of her. She comes in, like, she's asking questions. She kind of seems like she might be a fucking cop. Like,
yeah, yeah.
They don't want her around.
And then she even makes a comment to where, like, "What, you're surprised we're not all gangbangers here?" You know,
right?
I do think that Helen, I don't think of her as, like, a bad person in this, though. And in fact, one of the flaws that black critics will point out is that she's, like, a white savior character. But she means well, I think. But yeah, she does. Some people are like, who is this cop walking around here? The woman they're speaking to says that she heard the murder of Ruthie Jean, the woman who was supposedly killed. She says she called 911, but nobody came, which is, you know, this not movie.
Surprising.
Yeah, but there are criticisms of this movie that it's made by a white man and it has a white perspective. It does, you know, I'll run down some of the criticisms that black critics have said about the original Candyman. They said it's a film by white people for white people, and you uses black people to scare them, and, you know, and all these things are, you know, correct. The black community of Cabrini Green is used as another monster. It doesn't contextualize Cabrini Green a whole lot, so if you have the wrong mindset, you could watch it and go, "Oh, these people live like animals."
Just like that whole, like, outside the apartment thing, like, where it's just like,
yeah,
it's like, this is terrifying, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The imagery they use is like to set it up so that you're like, I wouldn't want to be here. Nobody should want to be here.
Yeah, yeah. And to be fair, I would be scared walking around there, whatever. But just a few more criticisms that were leveled against it. There's not a lot of time with black characters. And then also, why does Candyman kill black victims? Like, why would he do that? You know, given the story of who Candyman is. But that's all I'll say, get back to like where we were in the plot here. When she says that, you know, she called 911, but of course nobody ever came. It's like, for all the flaws that the original Candyman has, there is some progressive ideas in it. Like, it does seem to want to address these issues and say, you know, have something positive and correct to say, but, you know, it has its flaws too.
Yep.
She tells them that she believes Candyman is real and that they'll never catch him. At a dinner with like this elitist professor guy, Helen is at, he tells her like the story of Candyman. It goes back to the 1890s. He was a son of a slave. And he was like this artist. You know, he actually went to, like, his dad made money and he went to school and he was like this artist. He did portraits of people. This wealthy landowner hired him to do a portrait of his daughter. And the original Candyman fell in love with her and impregnates her. And the father was not happy about this, so he paid hooligans to kill him. They got creative. They chased him down to Cabrini Green. They cut off his hand. They smeared him in honey, and bees stung him to death. Then they burned his body and spread his ashes over Cabrini Green. So that's the legend of Candyman. And so, you know, that, like, this story is all around just, like, steeped in the racial history of America and stuff. And it's what cracks me up when this new one was coming out. People were like, oh, this is going to be woke Candyman now. It's like,
it already was.
Dude, yeah, like, Candyman is about, like, race. Like, that's kind of what these movies are about.
Right. At least this one was. Yeah. We could talk briefly about Candyman 2 and 3, but
yeah, I was gonna say the new one is definitely the new one is even more so, and it addresses problems of the original, and it's also what even less subtle about what it's trying to say.
For sure. Yep.
Anyways, back at Cabrini, she talks to a young boy. The kid is afraid to talk to her because Candyman will get him. She pressures him to show him where Candyman is. He takes her to this public bathroom in the courtyard. And on the way, they pass like this huge bonfire pile. This is like probably one of my favorite sequences in the movie. He points to the bathroom. He says a boy was castrated in there by Candyman. She goes in. There's a toilet filled with bees. Candyman shows up outside by the boy and goes inside of this this restroom, and it's a guy with a hook and some gang members. He says, I hear you're looking for Candyman, bitch, and he just hits her in the head with the hook. I guess just trying to intimidate her to not keep fucking around there. She picks him out of a lineup later, and apparently he runs some gang called the Overlords, and they pin a bunch of murders on him. Then shortly after this, Tony Todd, the actual Candyman, approaches her in a parking garage at the university. He says that, you know, he came for her because she doubted him. He's like, you are not content with the story, so I was obliged to come. And he shows her his bloody stump with the hook, and he tells her, be my victim. I am the writing on the wall. I am the whispers in the classroom. So now I must shed innocent blood. I love this whole introduction to him here, and just this little speech he gives her. She wakes up in Cabrini, though, covered in blood after this encounter. And she's in the woman they talked to earlier. She's in Anne-Marie's apartment with her Rottweiler's fucking head on the ground, blood all over the place. Anne-Marie is like there losing her mind. And I think, does Helen hit her with the cleaver, or is it the other way around? I don't know.
Yes. But, was she, they kind of both are kind of like standing off because I guess the other piece of this is the baby, Anne-Marie's baby is missing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very important. That's kind of why she's flipping out. And then when she opens the door, Helen's covered in like the Rottweiler blood. And so she thinks that Helen has killed her baby.
Yeah.
And attacks her. And then they, you know, I guess the cops have been called in the meantime, but she like knocks out Anne-Marie, and then the cops show up and arrest her.
Yeah. The cops no longer friends with, like they were just buddy buddy with her, 'cause she picked out the Overlord's leader, but now no longer nice to her. They definitely think that she did it and that she's mentally ill. She calls her husband, who isn't at home, 'cause he's probably fucking a student somewhere. Like 3 a.m. You know, we find out that Xander Berkeley is maybe not the best guy in this.
Yeah.
anyway, so Helen believes that Candyman is real now. She's seeing him all over the place. And basically what the thing is like, I think he, like, what Candyman's trying to say is that, like, he needs to kill Helen to help him like build his legend back up and regain power, kind of, I think, what's going on here,
something to that degree. Yeah.
Our friend Bernadette shows up one of the times when she's seeing Candyman, and then next thing you know, Helen wakes up in handcuffs and Bernadette's dead on the floor,
which I guess, like, and maybe we should touch on this briefly. So this is after she's killed the dog, and yeah. What Ben, she showed up in the apartment and the baby is missing.
Yeah. And she's like three.
And so, yeah. And like, and like they let her go within like 24 hours. And so then she's there with her friend Bernadette, and then she wakes up and Bernadette's dead. Like, so now it seems like even create, like, I don't know why they would have let her go, but like, 'cause
I guess you could say that they didn't really have anything on her, you know, like they had a dead dog and she's covered in blood. I don't know.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, there's like questions there, but it is also like,
this is still a horror movie. Like, it's still, you know what I mean? Like, for as great as it is, and as, you know,
well,
but things you have to kind of brush over and be like,
sure. I do think it's also, it's just interesting. Like when you compare it socially, like to this and to the new one, that like If that had been a black character that had woken up, killed a dog, and a baby was
missing, would be killed by the cops.
They either have been killed by the cops, or they certainly would have still been in jail. They would not have been given bail to get out. Yeah. But Helen, like being you know the white character here and the one with privilege and power, she's able
kind
to
kind of an upper class
out.
Character too. You know, yeah. Not yeah. So
she's in grad school, like.
Yeah. Yeah. But that, you know, after Bernadette ends up dead, she's hospitalized, and doctors are questioning her.
Now it's you're a fucking loony.
She tells them that, like, she's like in the doctor's office, and you know, he's like sitting behind a desk, and she's like, I can prove to you that he's real. And she calls Candyman, and he shows up behind the doctor and he fucking kills a dude with a hook. Pretty great scene. He rips open Helen's restraints. I think, doesn't he just go flying out of the window after that? Like, just flies backwards?
Yeah.
And then she gets out of the hospital by escaping out of the window.
Such a goofy scene, too.
She escapes out the window, comes back in, steals a nurse's uniform, this whole bit. She gets back home to her apartment, and Xander Berkeley, he's at home with a student painting the apartment, like, completely painting the apartment a new color. And he tells, like, this girl that he's apparently banging now to call the hospital. And Helen, you know, says it's over, and she leaves. She goes through Cabrini. She goes back to Cabrini. She finds Candyman, like, sleeping. Attacks him, but doesn't do anything. And he says, surrender, and the child will be unharmed, the missing child that he has. He lifts her up. You know, he says, come with me and be immortal. Kisses, covers her in bees, kisses her with bees. Says, it's time for a new miracle. She wakes up again. There's like graffiti on the wall. Says it was always you, Helen. And she could hear the baby crying in the bonfire pile that we saw outside from earlier. And we're at the big climax here. She climbs through this pile of trash, and the residents kind of hear her, you know, moving stuff and throwing stuff around. And she's carrying a hook this whole time. So the kid that she met earlier, he sees the hook going into the pile that she's carrying, like just glimpses it at the last second. And he says, oh, you know, he's here. The Candyman's here. And all the residents come out and, you know, light this huge pile on fire. And she's like inside the fire and she stabs Candyman. She gets the baby out, you know, she takes the baby from him and she crawls out, but she's like on fire. Like her hair is gone, but the baby's alive. Candyman dies in the fire. And then Helen dies shortly thereafter, after getting the baby out. And it ends with, you know, the professor, Trevor Xander Berkeley at her funeral. There's like not really anybody there, but at the very end, like all these people from Cabrini Green show up to pay respect. Yeah, Anne Marie's there with her baby. The boy that she met earlier, he throws the hook on her casket. And then we get one more standard horror scene at the very end. And it's, I actually like it. This final scene where Trevor's started this new life with this new girl. But he goes in the bathroom and he's crying and he's thinking about Helen, feeling bad. And he says her name. Like, keeps saying, oh, Helen, Helen, Helen. And she shows up and kills him. And I think doesn't the girlfriend come in and find him dead in the bathtub at that point?
Yep.
And that's the end. I think this movie's pretty great, man. Like, I love all that stuff at the end. Like, everything from, like, her going back to Cabrini Green, you know, with the bonfire, all that, the funeral, and this final scene, I think are really great. I think the movie as a whole, like, you know, kind of says a lot about the power of storytelling. I think it's tackling, you know, issues that, especially at the time it came out, is kind of surprising, especially from a white filmmaker. And I do think it's an interesting historical document of Chicago at the time. It's one of the only things that's ever shown Cabrini Green on film. So I don't know about you, Chris. I really love the original Candyman.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it quite a bit. I mean, I think it is paced more like a mystery.
Yeah.
Like a mystery thriller than anything else with the supernatural tinge, right? Like Candyman is the supernatural bend to that, to the mystery. And I think like the final act is, you know, ramps up pretty great, like from her escaping from the asylum to then rescuing the baby in the bonfire, crawling out with the baby and rescuing him. I think it's really, really good. It's a fun watch. It's one of those things like I still don't want to like say Candyman in a mirror, right? It's like one of the, like, I know it's not real, but it's like, it's one of those things where it's like the storytelling just carries through you, and you know, you do hear urban legends of the sort, and it's one that just, it has a lot of weight to it, which you can't say to a lot of, you know, a lot of horror films, like the especially more mainstream ones,
and especially one that, again, this is not your standard slasher, but it's like almost in that corner of the horror genre. You know what I mean? And it just like, I got a lot more going on than like a.
Yeah, I mean, for the longest time, like I actually didn't. You know, I watched this maybe about 10 years ago or so for the first time, and it's one of those ones where it's like, well, Candyman is just like, you know, he's knockoff Jason, knockoff Michael. Like, it's like you hear about, you've heard about them, but mostly like what you know outside of like this original film are that two very terrible, almost, I think, maybe direct-to-video sequels. Like, and he's thrown around in the same, like, Candyman is thrown around in the same, like, you know, same terms as Leatherface and he's one of the big, exactly. Yeah, so it's like, I'm not really sure, but then finally, like, seeing that, like, it's way more, you know, it's way more advanced than, like, as much as I love Halloween or Friday the 13th or anything like
there's
that.
There's a little more going on, you know?
Yeah, like, there's way more subtext. It's psychological in a way, to the point where it's like, does Candyman exist, or like, was she just fucking batshit crazy? Like, ultimately, we know that Candyman does exist, but it was painted as like, she's crazy. She's like, she's having a mental break, and she's using this urban legend as her crutch to cope with it. You know, ultimately, the ending reveals that Candyman is real, and she's not batshit. But it's, you know, it's almost to a point, it may kind of like, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street 2, right? Where it's like there's a little more subtext going on, in it's not just your typical slasher. Actually, this is very much not your typical slasher. So
yeah,
I like it. You know, I like the studying of, you know, myths and legends as well. So it's like a cool concept, and I think they do a good job here. I do, like, you know, reading, you know, black critics now, especially, like, I certainly wasn't seeking them out 10 years ago when I watched this originally, and certainly wasn't seeking them out when, what was this, 1992? So I was like in eighth grade. I wasn't seeking out, and there probably weren't a lot of black critics at that point. There's still not as many as probably should be, but, yeah, like, it's just not something that you think about, and going in, like, first time I watched it, I was like, oh, that's neat. Like, this time around, though, watching it, it's like, yeah, I could definitely see where they'd be like, Helen's the white savior. Like, she crawls out of a fire pit to rescue the baby. She reclaims her good name, at least, you know, among the standing of the victims.
Why, given the story of Candyman, would he attack black people? You know?
Yeah,
I think the things that the new movie tries to address.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, even those black critics will tell you they think it's one of the best horror movies of all time. Like, you know, things can have flaws, and you can still love them. You know,
well, and it's, you know, exactly. You can have flaws, but you can also celebrate that, you know, it's a more mature slasher. It's a horror film that does what, like, good horror should do, which is, you know, question, you know, social themes and norms. Not every horror film needs to do that. Not every horror story needs to do that. But, like, you know, some of the best do take, like, horrific imagery and stories and, you know, approach them against, you know, social issues and social norms as a way of explaining things to people. So, yeah, I really like it. I wish that the two sequels were better. But
I always liked the New Orleans one, the second one. I actually own that on Blu-ray.
I love the setting. I think those are much more standard, like slasher.
Yeah.
And it's just like you watch this one, and then you watch those two, and it's like, oh wow, like,
yeah.
But it's just the, you know, not having grown up with watching Candyman, it's like, How the hell did Candyman become, like, you know, a name that is held in high reverence in horror? And it's simply on the you know, the quality of this original film.
Quality of it, the simple idea of saying his name five times as kids around school talk about that, yeah. And I think a lot of its reputation as being the scariest movie ever was kids who had not seen it when they were little kids.
Sure, yeah.
Although I do think it is...
it has some good
scares. It's got some power, yeah. You want to give rating?
Yeah. I'm going to go 4 out of... Oh, we do 10, right? So I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay. For me, I think... You know, I've already said all the reasons why I really like the original Candyman. But I also think it's one of the best horror movies of the 90s. I think out of any of the horror movies of the 90s, like all the big ones, like this one is aged the least. It feels like a movie that could have came out pretty recently. So it's a 9 out of 10 for me for the original Candyman. Love it.
Great.
And now we're going to get into the new Candyman, the sequel from 2021.
Candyman. The urban legend is, if you say his name 5 times while looking in the mirror, he appears in the reflection and kills you.
Who would do that?
Candyman. 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 Candyman.
Well, we're still alive. Let's go.
Trina, you've broken the door.
This isn't funny!
I feel really connected to this neighborhood. Cabrini Green. It was the projects. I just moved in around the corner.
The old candy factory.
I'm an artist.
You're looking for Candyman. He's the monster. It's part of this neighborhood.
Why are you drawn to this?
I'm hoping to spread the story all about Candyman. The mirror invites you to summon him. You should say his name. I dare you.
Candyman.
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 Candyman. Candyman.
Don't say that.
Candyman.
I think I made a mistake. I brought him back.
Candyman isn't real!
Something's happening to me.
He had a purpose for you. Be another one of his terrible stories.
I guess he found me. I am the writing on the wall. The sweet smell of blood. Be my victim.
This is not real. It's not real.
Once again, there will be less detail. I'll run through like what happens in it, and we'll talk about things that we remember liking and rate it. But yeah, it won't be as many notes as to what happens step to step. The new Candyman, written by Nia DaCosta, Jordan Peele, and Wynn Rosenfeld. It's directed by Nia DaCosta. I think it's her second film. I forgot the name of her first film, and I have not seen it yet, but I've been meaning to go check it out. And then I think she's going to be doing The Marvels, right?
Yes, she's doing The Marvels, and her first film was called Little Woods.
Little Woods, which I've heard is pretty good. It stars Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, Teyonah Parris, and Coleman Dingo. This new one came out August 27th of this year. Budget of $25 million. Box office of $70 million so far. It's also currently the top streaming rental out there, which is pretty impressive because it's a $20 rental. Seems like people have no problem spending $20 to rent a movie. A lot of the movies in like the top 10 rentals are $20 movies. So, it got it has a Rotten Tomato score of 84%, an IMDb of 6.1. And the story here is Mateen. First off, it's modern day, so it's taking place where the Cabrini Green Towers once stood, but the neighborhood has been completely gentrified. And all of this is accurate to real life, and a lot of this was shot on location in Chicago. All that remains of the old Cabrini Green is these row houses that are mostly vacant. There's maybe 100 tenants left in them, and that's all that's left of Cabrini Green. And our main character, played by Mateen, his name is Anthony. He lives in Chicago with his girlfriend. He's an artist. She's an art gallery director. He hears of the story of Candyman and becomes interested in it. And he's thinking about maybe doing like a, what is it, an exhibit about, you know, about the legend of Candyman.
Yeah. I mean, let me touch on like the fact that Anthony has been struggling, right? Like as an artist, he
yeah. Well, all artists are,
but yeah,
he's, I would say 99% of them are. Yeah.
Yeah, while struggling in the fact that he is struggling to actually create new art, yeah. Right? Like yeah. he's kind of what he was seen as one of the up and coming artists.
Yeah.
But he is struggling and
true.
Troy, Brianna's brother, or I guess maybe it's not Troy, but maybe it's Troy's boyfriend, tells the story.
Yeah, they're all hanging out one night. Here's the story. He's intrigued, and it's like he's finally got some inspiration now. You know?
Yeah, that's what kind of sets off on his new installation that he wants to put together.
He goes down there and he's, you know, wandering around taking pictures. He gets stung by a bee on the hand, and you know, if you know the story and all that, you're like, uh-oh. He runs into this guy that's owns a laundromat, and he's one of the few tenants who still live in those row houses. And this guy is played by Coleman Dingo. He tells him the story of Candyman, and you know, if you're familiar with the original, you might be like, "What the hell is this?" Because like, it's a completely different story. It's about this guy that he remembers when he was a kid in the 70s. And it was this guy that would hang around, and he had a hook for a hand, and he would give candy to kids. And rumor has it, some kids got like a razor blade in the candy, and the, you know, that partially a callback to something you see in the original. And you know, the cops end up going in there, finding this guy, and fucking beating him to death. And it's interesting because you find out later that, you know. And which is true of urban legends is they like iterate on themselves. There's different versions of it and stuff. And so like, this is just another one of the candy men, you know, that make up the hive. But you do find out that like the original story does still exist that we heard in the first film. But anyways, yeah. So our main character, he starts getting really into this shit. You know, he does his exhibit on this, right? And then like two of his girlfriend's coworkers stay after they close, and they say Candyman in the mirror, and he shows up and kills them.
Yeah. I guess a quick note about his exhibit that he has at the gallery. It's a medicine cabinet that opens like when you open it. It opens up into like an empty, like a, not empty, but like this bigger area. So it's kind of like a callback to the first film where, you know, you take the medicine cabinet down, you can get into the other apartment.
And like so,
and like, I guess the duality of things is like what he was kind of painting. And so, yeah.
We get a few other kills of like kind of random people. Like there's like these kids that are in a bathroom. Like non characters in the movie. It just cuts to them at one point, and they summon Candyman and he kills them. And the one thing I would say about the kills in this is they're very stylized and cool. Like the bathroom one, like someone drops like a little mirror on the floor, and you see a lot of what's happening play out through the mirror. There's one where I think it's like an art critic he goes to talk to at some point, and after he leaves,
she's the art critic that like criticized his piece there at the gallery.
And the camera like is like outside the apartment building when this kill happens, and like it just zooms out, and you just see her in the window of the apartment building, kind of like floating around, getting killed.
That's one of the cool things I like about, right, is that so as you said, it's stylized. Candyman is only visible in the mirror,
Yeah.
So it's like when you get glimpses of the mirror, like you do on the floor or in the art installation, like you can see him killing them, but anything pulled back or out of view of the mirror, it looks like there's nothing there, and like really cool looking.
I think this whole movie looks great.
Like, yeah.
Speaking of Nightmare on Elm Street 2, this dude, this main character, that bee sting, like, gets real nasty and infected, and yeah, just like
some body horror shit going on.
Basically, it looks like a burn is spreading across his body, and like he's slowly turning into the Candyman. I think, you know, and then eventually he goes back to the laundromat guy, right?
Before that, he goes and visits his mom.
Is that before? Okay.
Yeah, but I think it's before he goes and, well, no, maybe he does go talk to Burke again to figure out what the hell's going on.
And that's when Burke lays out, you know, yeah, there's been other Candyman too, and yes, you hear the original story again.
And that's why he goes to see his mom.
Yeah, so he goes to see his mom. I think we get, in my opinion, a twist that I did not see coming at all, and I really dug here. You find out he's the baby. Like, our main character is the baby from the original Candyman, the baby that went missing, gets recovered at the end. Yep, also really cool that the actress who played Anne-Marie in the original is back in this for that scene.
Yeah, Vanessa Williams.
Yeah.
Mind you, so like a former Miss America.
Yeah.
She's back.
Whatchamacallit. So we get that really cool twist.
And that's where it really, like, it's not a reboot. It's not a reimagining. This is a direct sequel to the original film.
Yeah. You know, he was the baby from the original. Yeah. And so like, yeah, I know a lot of, like, going into this for the last year, like, people are like, is this a reboot? What is this? It's, to me, it's a straight sequel. It's a straight sequel to the original. It just ignores 2 and 3.
It is, it's very akin to, Halloween 2018. Where it picks up, you know, 30 years later, 40 years later, whatever.
Yeah. He just kind of goes off to, you know, we're getting to the, near the end of here. He goes off to Cabrini Green as he's like slowly transforming and whatnot. His girlfriend Brianna goes looking for him. She goes to the laundromat guy, and I think he attacks her.
Yep.
Doesn't she just then wake up in the church and they're all three there?
Yes. Yeah. He knocks her out. I think uses like chloroform or something on her.
Yeah.
She wakes up in the church.
And he explains, like, we find out that this guy's like a bad guy here. And he explains that he wants to turn the dude into the new Candyman to I think not only bring the legend back, but to like reclaim him as like a symbol of power for the area.
Yeah.
So people, you know, again, it goes back to the criticism. Why is he attacking black people? You know, let's bring him back, but make him like a thing of power for us.
It's a
cool, you know, I think
it's a very cool idea, but also like just this, how gentrification and remodeling areas takes away that history. And like, these stories that, you know, have probably been passed down in Cabrini Green since, you know, I mean, in this version of Cabrini Green, since the original Candyman was murdered, you know, that's gone now. Right. So he wants to bring it back. And like that, it's again, the story, it's the power of storytelling and myths and legends.
And it's what I love about the original. And it's part of what I love about this one. Spoilers here, I really enjoyed this one too. But yeah, now he like goes to complete the transformation of him, and he like, was he like saw off the dude's arm and puts a hook in him and stuff.
Yeah.
I think she like runs away and he chases her down. Not her boyfriend, but this laundromat owner, Burke. He like chases her down and she like stabs him, right? Like she stabs him to death. And her boyfriend shows up. I think she's like still stabbing him or something. And he's like, I think he's dead. which is pretty funny, I thought. But then the police show up and shoot him, right? Like, they kill him?
Yeah, because, you know, they come in, they see a guy dead. I think he had pulled the knife from her at that point, or the weapon from her. Yeah, the knife in
his hand, and he's got a hook in his other hand. And...
Yeah, so, like, he looks, I mean, I wouldn't say he looks menacing, but you know how the cops are going to frame it. Yeah, they come in, and, like, it's immediate, right? Like, she's like, no, no, and, like, she doesn't even get to say kind of no, no at that point, and they shoot him dead. And then handcuff her and put her behind, put her in the car, which creates an interesting scene there, too.
Yeah, and also, I love the look of this final scene, because the police lights just give it cool lighting. Anytime there's, like, blue police lights and stuff going, I think at night shit looks cool. But yeah, she's in the back seat. This cop in the Chicago cop in the front seat is like looking at her, talking to her, and he's like, you know, what is he like trying to say? Like, basically trying to tell her that the murder was justified, right? You saw what happened, right? Like, we had to shoot him. And she's finally like, I'll say whatever you want. Honestly, if you just let me see myself in the mirror, like if you tilt your rearview mirror so I could see myself. And he's like, what the fuck? Okay, sure. He does that, and I knew it was coming here, and I like just got real excited about it. But he tilts the mirror towards her. She says Candyman five times, and I think at this point it's like her boyfriend shows up, right?
Yeah.
Kills the fuck out of every cop in the area. She gets out and she like goes chasing down, and like I think at this point he turns into Tony Todd, Candyman. And, you know, we get this awesome fucking final shot where, like, finally you see, you know, the original Candyman again, and he says, tell everyone, and that's the end of the movie. And I'm walking out of the theater pretty fucking happy about this. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Love the ties to the original film. I think one we missed was that they used, and I don't know if it was new audio, but they basically get Helen. They have recordings of Helen from her, you know, her doctorate, I guess, her master's program. And like he's listening to that, learning about this. And that's kind of also, you know, then he goes, talks to Burke and ends up at his mom. It's like awesome touches like throughout that. We didn't touch on the like kind of shadow puppets.
Yeah, when they're telling the stories, they use the shadow puppet things.
Like, I thought they were like cool, like really cool stylized, interesting way of doing it.
We didn't touch on either, and I didn't explain this really, but the laundromat guy was this little boy who kind of tipped the cops off to the dude that was killed back in the day.
Yeah.
And then I think then that Candyman showed up and like killed his sister or something crazy like that too.
Yeah, because they were fucking around, and they I guess they set it into the mirror.
Yeah,
and like he sees like the door cracks open, and he sees them all killed, and I guess like he's held that in this entire time. Like he's felt, you know, he's felt responsible for, you know, not just the murder of the original Candyman, the one that was hiding from the cops that was not giving razor blade candy out to little girls. But then he also, you know, kind of also feels guilty about the fact that his sister was killed by this legend as well. And since then he's been trying to figure out a way to recapture that and reclaim it. Really, really, really cool. I enjoyed every second of it. Thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, too. You want to do ratings?
Sure. I'm actually going to go slightly higher than the original here. I'm going to give this an 8.
Okay.
I really, really enjoyed it.
I think that this is about as good as you could have asked for out of this. You know what I mean? I don't have a problem with the fact that it is so blunt about its themes and what it's about, because I don't know. One, it just doesn't bother me. And two, I think that like some people need that shit to be beat over their head before they like realize what the fuck is.
I was gonna say, like, I think we've learned over the last like 4 or 5 years that some people don't get subtlety. They need it just like spelled out for them. Like, why shit is bad? Why shit is good?
I do think some people are turned off by you know, like horror movies being overly political, and I do think, you know, there's people I think even rightfully would say I like it more subtle, like, than it being spelled out to me.
Sure,
and that's your right, I guess. But you know, I have no problem with it. Again, and I thought this is about as good as it was gonna get doing a follow up so many years later. I love that it comments on the changes of the. Love the kind of body horror nightmare ending. I love that twist. I like this a lot. It's just for me, it comes in a little lower than the original, just because the original was first. It created the whole legend. Yeah. This is commenting on it, so it's just a little bit lower for me. But at the same time, you know, I'm giving it an 8. I don't give a lot of movies an 8 on here. So.
Yeah.
Which means we are in a tiebreaker situation. You're saying the new one, you're going to go with the new one.
Yeah, I like the new one slightly above the original.
I'm going with the original, again, just because it did it first. And it did it first, and it has that old, like, there's something special to me about it having the Cabrini Green, the towers.
Yep.
Tiebreaker situation, which means we go to our online poll. I only conducted in one place this time, and that was on Twitter. Not a ton of votes, but 75% of them went to the original. So the original comes out on top. But I think we both think that these are both pretty awesome. You should watch them both. They go together. I don't think you should watch the new one without watching the original. What about you, Chris?
I agree. Like, I think, well, you know, with the, especially the twist with the tie of, you know, Anne Marie being, you know, Anthony's mom.
It means nothing to you if you have not seen the original. I mean, yeah, like, explain it just, the story, like, in this, but it's like,
it just blows over. Like, it's like, yeah, you get the 2 minute puppet scene, but
yeah.
But yeah, I think you should, like, and actually I think it works.
It means more to you if you have that context. Yep. You know.
And I think it works great as a double header, right? Like, watch the original I kind of did that. I went and watched the original Candyman and then went out to the theater and watched the second one that same day. I think it would work real well that way.
Yeah. And despite the fact that, you know, the original walks away the winner here, I'll be buying this new one on 4K. I mean, shit, I own Candyman too, so might as well own a good one.
Yeah.
Chris, what do we have for next month?
All right. So generally, like, we've stayed away from franchises. We did one this week, this month. I'm gonna stick with a franchise.
All right.
And I have a proposal here. So let me spell this out. So we're both gonna see Halloween Kills.
Oh yeah, multiple times.
That is not my suggestion here. But anybody that knows the Halloween franchise knows that the timeline for that is super fucked up.
You need charts and graphs.
Yeah. And so in reality, there are 3 Halloween 2s.
Yeah.
So there's Halloween 2, the original, that took place in, like, 1980. Yeah. There is Rob Zombie's Halloween 2.
Okay, yeah.
Technically, there is also, there's H2O, which is technically, I guess that's actually Halloween 4.
That's a Halloween.
Yeah, because that supposes that Halloween 2 existed originally.
Yes, it does, yeah.
And then there is Halloween 2018.
Yeah.
I am suggesting a triple header here where we explore the 3 sequels to the original Halloween. Technically, Halloween 2, Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 is a sequel to his Halloween, but I think it deserves discussion here, especially since there are some, not me, not saying you either, Jeff, but some people have come around on Rob Zombie's Halloween films.
I'm telling you right now that it's surprisingly Halloween 2 is the one. Halloween 2 is the one that people say is one of the best. I know people say it's one of the best horror movies ever made. It's the best Rob Zombie movie ever made. It's the best Halloween movie. I think it's insane. I'd be happy to reevaluate it once again.
Yeah. So those I'd like us to do a triple feature. I know we did this back in Christmas for Black Christmas, but this with Halloween, we're definitely gonna be talking Halloween Kills. Let's examine the Halloween sequels.
Part twos.
Yeah, the part twos of the Halloween franchise. And I have another suggestion here. I'm thinking we bring a third person in to watch them with us.
Okay.
I have some thoughts. We'll keep that off. We'll talk about that off air. But
so we may or may not have a first guest host.
Yes. And you know, Halloween is something that both Jeff and I love a lot as a franchise. I think we're both really excited for Halloween Kills. It's after Halloween. It'll be our November episode, but let's talk some Halloween.
We'll have Halloween on the brain.
Yes.
And I'm going to be picking over those Halloween 4Ks coming out. So
very soon. Yep.
Very excited to see what Halloween. I watched Halloween 2 recently on the Blu-ray, and I'm like, how are they going to make it look any better than this? It looks incredible on the Scream Factory set. So that's a great looking movie. It's the second one.
Yes.
But anyways,
one of my favorite horror films of all time, but also, I'm interested to see how we come away with it. I have not watched Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 in quite some time. And I just like to see how, all three of them approach
like watching those in that order. Yeah.
Following off of the original story. So Halloween next month.
Halloween twos. I like it. I had a feeling something like this might be coming because I would have tried to do something like this too. And I was thinking in my head, how would I do it? I did not think of the Rob Zombie Halloween 2 though. So that's interesting. Yeah, I'm excited.
All right.
We'll be back with Halloween twos.